Italian immigrants, and my dad used to take me to watch my other brothers, my older brothers, play a lot of baseball, because I was more interested in basketball. And Long Island, as you know, Harvey, was a pretty good bet for Major League ball players: Billy Lowe, Eddie Yost, Whitey Ford, Phil Rizzuto, Babe Young, Frank McCormick, and it goes on and on, you know, and it was a heck of a bet for baseball.
Right. Why was that?
Well, I think one of the big reasons was there was empty lots all over the place, you know, and each day they were out playing ball. I know I'd go out in the morning, and my mother would have to send my brothers looking for me, and I'd be playing basketball, and then I'd go watch my brothers play, and if they needed a man, they'd throw me in the game. And I think because they had lots and lots and lots more fields around. Like, they don't have that many around anymore now, so I think that's what it did. But the greatest thing on my behalf was that I had two uncles that played in the major leagues, and when their season was over, they used to come home and teach me how to do this, how to do that. My Uncle Tony used to bring Al Lopez over. He'd teach me about hitting, and if I wanted to be a catcher, he'd instruct me on catching. So, you know, by the time I ever went away to play ball, or even if I got into Sandlot now and then, I was way ahead of the rest of them fundamental-wise, because I was taught by guys that were darn good in their profession.
Mm-hmm. You're really an interesting story. I don't want to forget, though. I'd like to get your address on the tape.
Well, my address.
So you can get a book when it comes out.
My address is 340 Adams Street, ADAMS, Quincy, Massachusetts, 02169.
Do you know my wife's relatives came out of Quincy, Massachusetts?
No kidding.
Yeah, Milton's. Do you know Milton's department store?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Milton's department store.
Well, Milton is her cousin.
You mean the clothing store?
The clothing, yeah.
They're great friends of mine.
Real? You know Milton Katz?
Yes, absolutely.
I gotta get my wife on it, even though I know you're rushing to your door. It just says a kick. Hang on one second.
Lerna, pick up one minute.
This is my wife, Mara.
Okay.
This is Sam Mealy, Mara, who was a great baseball player, but he is from Quincy, Mass, and he knows Milton.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, I shopped in his store for years and years and years. He's at the South Shore Plaza in
right.
I guess it's Braintree now.
Yeah, well, they have so many stores.
Yeah, well, see, that was the one closest to me.
Uh-huh.
And they used to be in Quincy.
Right.
At one time, and then they moved there.
Right.
Let me go back then to the Cuccinellos.
All right.
Because I didn't know they were your relatives.
Oh, yeah, my uncles, right.
Your uncles. One of them I know played for the Yankees, right? Or am I wrong?
No.
Cleveland?
No, he was a coach for Cleveland.
Right.
He was with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and then he went to the Braves, and then he went to the Giants for a while.
That was Tony.
Tony, right.
And Frank?
No, Al.
Oh, Al.
Al was his brother, played for the Giants and the Cardinals a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, an interesting story. I did play some Sandlot ball, and the first doubleheader, I got about 8 or 9 hits, and then the second doubleheader, I went 0-13, and I came home and I threw my uniform on the floor, and my mother, boy, she gave it to me. You can't quit, this and that. Now she tells her brothers, and one by one, they chewed me out. And Tony even said to me, what are you worried about? You went 0-13. I went 0-17 in the big leagues. So what? There's always a game tomorrow. And boy, I tell you, they taught me an awful lesson. I mean, about not quitting, and even to the point when I finally did sign with the Red Sox, I went away to play at Scranton. They gave me great tips on when you eat in restaurants, you make sure you leave a nice, decent tip, because those girls will always remember it, or the waiter, whoever it was,
uh-huh.
And they'll always treat you well.
Did you have any superstitions or growing up in terms of baseball, like doing anything with your glove? I got stories of people. They wrap their glove up in wire and stuff like that?
No, not really. No, I really didn't.
And did you come from a poor family, or did you have enough to get along on?
Oh, no. My father, they both were Italian immigrants. He made about $14 a week, and there were 7 in our family. miles in the wintertime and in the summer naturally, but...
What did he do?
He worked for a Consolidated Gas Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a problem, a beam fell on him, so they made him more or less of a watchman later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you something, for Italian immigrants, they were something. Matter of fact, they came to see me play my first game in the Yankee Stadium, and I hit a home run. And that was my first home run, and the traveling secretary went and got that ball from the fan that caught it, gave him a new ball, and I signed that over to my mother, and it's in my sister's house to this day, and that was 1947.
Wow. That was the year Jackie Robinson came up, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
How did you get to the major leagues? Do you remember who signed you, the scout?
Yes, I was playing some baseball a little bit, but I went to New York University on a basketball scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Mahoney, who was a great friend of the Bill McCartney, who was a baseball coach at New York University.
Right, Eddie Yost mentioned him.
Yes, he played for him too.
Right, were you a you younger or older than Eddie?
I'm older than Eddie.
Right, see?
Yeah, I was before him.
Right.
And Ralph Branca was there too, but I was before Ralph.
Right, I have a call into both Branca and Thompson. I think those would be interesting to get in the book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but Thompson called back, but Branca hasn't, but I'll keep on top of him.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so Joey Amalfitano, I interviewed him a few days ago. He also is the son of Italian immigrants.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, for Pete's sake.
Yeah,
that was really something, I'll tell you.
So this was 1947, the traveling secretary.
Yeah, he went out and gave this guy that caught the ball in left field, and that fellow gave him the ball, and he gave it to me, and as I said, I signed it to my mother, and it's in my sister's house to this day.
How did you get to the majors? That's what I cut you off on that. You were at NYU on a basketball scholarship.
Yeah, and then I started to play a little baseball up there, and the as I said, Neil Mahoney was a great friend of the Bill McCartney, the NYU coach, and he used to drive me up to Fenway Park just to work out. And I stayed up there maybe the weekend, and they drove me back to school. Matter of fact, when I was working out at Fenway Park, they told me to jump in and take five swings, and I did. And I took one pitch, and I heard his voice behind me say, "What was wrong with that pitch?" You know, and I said, "Well, I thought it was outside." This voice said, "Well, it was, but it was high enough for a strike." And when I got through, I walked out of the cage, and the fella called me over, and it was Ted Williams.
Boy.
He said, it was good you laid off that pitch. It wouldn't be anything you could do with it. But anyway, they used to drive me back and forth, and then Neil Mahoney took me into New York to meet Mr. Yorkey at the Commodore Hotel, and we agreed.
What year was this?
This was 42. It was before the war was on, but I was going to go into service.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed with them with just a handshake, and they said, "Well, they'll give you so much of a bonus now," which was $2,500, "and we'll give you the other $2,500 when you come out."
Mm-hmm.
And I had a big handshake with Mr. Yorkey and Neil Mahoney, the scout. And when I came out of the service, like February 4th, I think I went to spring training February 8th in 1946, and that year I stayed with Boston maybe for a week or so, and then they sent me down to minor leagues, and I played for Scranton for the whole year.
So you really started your major league career in 1947?
Major league, yes.
Major league.
Yes.
I
lasted 10 years and one day.
Boy, do you remember your first day? First game in the majors?
Yes, I do. I walked the first time at bat. I doubled off the left field wall. I singled, and then I walked again. I had a 2-for-2 day in Fenway Park.
And who what team did you play against?
We were playing the Philadelphia Athletics.
And the pitcher?
Well, I don't know who started, but Tom Ferrick was the fellow that came in relief. I think he came in. I know he came in relief, but I forget who started.
Right. Now, you were definitely probably not a Red Sox fan in your growing up years.
No. I was, strangely enough, I was a Detroit Tiger fan living in New York.
How come?
I don't know. I just like Schoolboy Row, Barney McCoskey. And the funny thing was, there was a picture a cartoon of McCoskey and Benny McCoy in the New York News, and I sent it to Barney McCoskey and asked him to sign it, and he sent me a different one back, and he kept that one. He says, I don't have this one for my scrapbook, so I'll send you this one. But you know the strange thing? Living in New York, my first manager in Boston was Joe Cronin, and he could not understand that I never went to Yankee Stadium to see Tony Lazzari play. He said he was one of the smartest ball players that ever played the game, and what a perfect gentleman. And you being from New York and Italian, and you didn't go see him play. And boy, I mean, he really gave me a dressing down.
Well, there were plenty of great Italians, especially DiMaggio.
Oh, brother, yeah. I played with Dominic in first year in 47. I was in the outfield. He was in center, Williams in left, and I was in right.
That was an incredible outfield.
And Dominic taught me all I knew, I'll tell you. When I talked to Williams about fielding, you know, he said, hey, you go talk to that little guy in center field. If you want to know about hitting, you come to me, but you go see DiMaggio about fielding.
So it was a two-thirds Italian outfield.
I had great times with that organization.
Right.
Ready to betray. high school basketball, and then we both went to New York University, made the basketball team, and then we both played on the baseball team, and he was drafted by the, well, he signed with the Yankees. He wasn't drafted, he signed with the Yankees, and then finally went on, I think, to Washington, and I guess he was the two at the same time that were in the big leagues from NYU. But there were others after that. I can't think of any offhand, but there was some after that, I know.
Right. Were you around there at the same time as Dolph Shays?
No, I was before him, too.
Before Dolph. So when were you born, Sam?
I was born in January 21st, 1922.
Uh-huh. So around the time, Red Holtzman, I did his autobiography.
I played against that guy, and he was tremendous.
Yeah, he was at City College.
Right. I was at NYU. You know what? That guy, I wasn't a bad scorer. As a matter of fact, I tied the Garden record one year playing against Fuzzy Levine.
Fuzzy, yeah, I know.
And we'd be soaring more than... My father would look at me, and he knew I didn't like to do it. So he'd say, all right, you, go ahead, go out and play ball. You know, he chased me out to play ball.
Uh-huh.
And then he used to go, as I said, he used to go watch my brothers. And from an Italian immigrant, I never knew that he was that great. Interested in basketball or baseball, they used to take me to watch them play.
Mm-hmm. But you never went to Yankee Stadium in all the time that you were there growing up?
Nope, never did. Mm. And you know what funny thing
was? Or the Polo Grounds or Ebbets Field?
I went to the Polo Grounds only because when I was going to sign, my Uncle Tony was the coach for the Giants.
Right.
No, he was with the Braves, excuse me.
The Braves, yeah.
And they were playing in the Polo Grounds, and he said, you got to do me a favor. You have to work out with the Braves. They won't give you... He knew the Red Sox were interested in me. He said, the Braves won't pay you like the Red Sox as a bonus. But do me a favor, because it would look bad, me being your uncle and you just up and sign with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Just come and work out with us, and then you can always say, well, I was offered a lot more. And I did. I worked out in the Polo Grounds, and I took some batting practice, and they offered me something, but it wasn't what the Red Sox were going to offer me, and that was it.
Mel Ott was the manager then?
No, it was Bill Terry.
Oh, Bill Terry.
Yeah.
Right.
Big and a
big
great
Bill.
Man.
Yeah.
He made me feel like I knew him for years.
That's incredible. Anyway, I'm going to pause here. You're a wonderful interview.
More money working than you could playing. So he didn't stay long after he got married.
And how about
time that I was in, well, I guess, in the grade school, the Department of Junior High, Joe DiMaggio was running his course. He got out of there in 1936, went on to the Yankees. And, of course, that became our team, naturally, because DiMaggio was a big star in New York. And a scout by the name of Joe Devine, D-E-V-I-N-E, was a Yankee scout. There weren't many scouts in those days. There'd one Bill Essex in Southern California, and Joe Devine in Northern California. He had a kid team called the Keneally Yankees. K-E-N-E-A-L-L-Y. And Neil Keneally sponsored the team. And he was a bartender. He owned a bar. And didn't drink. But every Sunday, we would get in cars, and get two or three cars, and transport the team all over the Bay Area, you know, into various areas of the San Francisco Bay Area. We'd play games. And we got the ex-Yankee uniform. This is when I was in high school. And I remember I had Frank Grissetti's uniform.
Really?
And, but they, you know, they sent them out there, and we played in those uniforms. They were the real uniforms. And then, you know, when World War II started, actually, I was going to USC. I had a baseball-basketball scholarship there. But when the war started, obviously, everybody had a different idea. And that's how I happened to play baseball that year, because I was only 17, and I wanted to get into what they call the V-5, Victor 5 program, the Naval Aviators.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't get in until I was 18, so I had this whole summer to kill, and I ended up signing a contract and taking off to Wellsville, New York with a couple of my buddies to play baseball for the summer. Uh-huh. That's how it all started.
But do you remember the conditions of signing, how much you signed for, or...?
Sure. $2,800 was a fortune then. Coming right out of the Depression, man, that was great.
$280,000. And the scout?
What's that?
The scout or the person who signed you, or the conditions of the signing?
Well, just I got a bonus, and the contract to play was $75 a month. And of the 3 months I spent there, which is July, well, part of June, July, August, and first week of September, I saved $100.
Had you been...
Big dinner for a dollar in those days.
Had you been east before?
Never. I'd never been farther south than San Jose.
And what did your parents say about this?
Well, I guess they were all for it, you know. I don't know more than they were for it. Charlie Silvera, who later became a Yankee, went with me. He signed out of St. Ignatius High. And a man by the name of Bob Cherry, who was my bosom buddy in high school, who died last 2 months ago, was with us. So the three of us took off together.
By car or train?
Train, on a train. My God, we were... It took you like... 40 hours and 40 nights and 40 months to get there. We were on the train forever. We finally got on a local train out of Chicago and got into Wellsville, New York about midnight or so. And we put our luggage on the platform, and the train left, and all the lights went out. It's pitch black. We didn't know where we were. So we finally found the main street. It wasn't hard to find. The town was only 5,000 strong. And we finally found the main street. And found the hotel and groped our way into that. And then we got a room at 120 Maple Avenue. Big room with three beds, a huge room across the whole front of the house. $7.50 a week.
What a bargain.
Well, then, that's a lot of our payroll. And we just needed the diner, and we'd have these big steak dinners for a dollar. Give us steak and all the trimmings and dessert and so forth. And a wonderful time. And we played in an infield that was all dirt. And we weren't there 2 weeks. Then the river overflowed behind the ballpark, and the ballpark was a bathtub. About 8 feet of water in the park. And we had to play in some place in Belfast that had no fences, no nothing. It was just a field. And we played some of our games there. But the funny part about that was the dirt infield I told you about. This tall, silver-haired man arrived one day working for the Yankees. And he'd go out there in the daytime, had on a pair of khaki pants, he'd take off his shirt, very bronze, and he'd rake up all these pebbles, put them in little piles, and take the wheelbarrow out there, put them in the wheelbarrow, and take them off. So this went on, and you know, nobody paying attention to him. Finally, one day he said, "Hey, you know how to hit and run?" I said, "Hit and run? Never heard of it. Want to learn?" I said, "Sure." So we showed up the next day, and he was on the mound pitching. And he said, "Now, I throw the ball, you hit it." He said, "Do you know what a hit and run is?"
"Do I?"
"Yeah, do you?"
"Oh, sure, I know."
"Well, I just want to see." I didn't have a seven. So he's throwing it high, low. throw and hit it. The idea with a hit and run is you have to make contact.
Right.
Because when you start the run, if you don't make contact, he's out.
It's not run and hit.
That's right. So I'm flashing away at this thing. This went on for about 4 or 5 days and finally disappeared. And Roy Brandenberger was our general manager. And when I went to...
ER at the end of the name?
Yeah, Brandenberger. ER, right. Roy Brandenberger. And the next day I went to the ballpark and he wasn't there. And so I said, Mr. Brandenberger, what happened to that man that was pitching to us? He said, oh, you mean Chief Bender?
Wow.
That, and I didn't know who Chief Bender was, except he was Connie Mack's greatest
pitcher.
In the early days of the century.
Yeah, I think he was a Pawnee Indian, right?
Yeah. And what a wonderful man he was. And so, anyway, that's how I learned to hit and run. And he stayed with me for those 4 or 5 days. I never forgot.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the team?
The Wellsville Yankees.
And you had uniforms like the Yankees?
Yeah, we had Yankees. I had number 12. Mm-hmm. And we never changed. It was filthy. Never had a morph, never changed.
But the road and home was the same one?
No. We had the home, the regular Yankee uniform. Home,
yeah.
But it had the W on it. And they had Wellsville on the road uniform. But these are old Yankee uniforms. They did that all the time in New York, too. Because I worked in the farm. I was the personnel director for 3 years in New York. And all the old uniforms kept being handed down to the minor league teams.
But it must have been a thrill then, thinking who had worn that uniform before, or was it?
I don't remember, frankly. All I know is my number was 12.
Now, what position did you play in Wellsville?
I played shortstop, and a bad shortstop. I was so bad, they moved me to third base. I made more errors than I got hits. And what happened was the first week, I had an old glove, this high school glove. And when you play once a week, it's not a problem. But I got a terrible...
Well, they didn't give you a glove or any equipment?
Oh, no, we had to buy all our stuff. They gave us the hat, the pants, the belt, and the shirt, and that was it. Everything else you supplied, including your sanitaries. But the first week I was there, I took a hard shot, and I got what they call a stone bruise or a bone bruise. I don't know what that is. That stayed with me all my life. In fact, my two fingers, my index and my middle finger on my left hand, turned white in cold weather because all those capillaries were hurt and destroyed, actually. And it was so painful for me that I started to yell, ouch, before the ball ever caught the ball. And frankly, I think that was part of my error problem. I was afraid of the ball. I was afraid to catch it. And I got off to a great start. I struck out my first 6 times. And my 7th time, I got hit right in the ribs. And we were in the middle of a beanball battle between these two teams. We got there mid-season, you see. This has been going on before we got there. But we had a wonderful time. Then the owners of the club, can't think of their names offhand, but they had 2 daughters. And we cozied up to them because... could raid their refrigerator every night. That's how we ate. Dixon, Jane Dixon was her name. She's a sweet. She was older than me, but man, she had a great refrigerator.
So you played those few months, from mid-season on to the end. Did the team do anything in terms of...
We missed the playoffs.
You missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then you went back home to San Francisco?
Took the train home, and I was 18 on the 14th of September, and the 15th I was at the ferry building getting this naval aviation program. That's how I got in the service.
How long were you in the service then?
Well, two hitches, 5 years, 3.5 in World War II, 1.5 in Korea, retired as lieutenant colonel.
Boy, very impressive.
It is, I don't know.
When you came out, though, you had to go down to the minors again, or did you come directly to the Yankees?
Oh, no. When the war was over, I ended up in Lake Wales, Florida, under Bill Meyer, who was a wonderful person, a great manager.
He'd been with the Pirates, right?
Yeah, before he went to the big leagues, 2 years before. I ended up in Florida with Bill Myers, and I have a man here working here, so if I leave you every now and then, you'll understand.
Sure.
In any event, I went to camp there. Then I played... 1 or 2 games with him. Mike Milosevic was a wartime infielder for the Yankees. Wasn't a very good player, and they put me at second base one game, and I did something wrong. I don't know what I was doing. I never played second base. And so they sent me to Binghamton the next day. And then I played for a guy named Garland Braxton, who was an old pitcher, and about 3 weeks into the season, along came Lefty Gomez, who was our manager.
Wow.
Yeah, well, he wasn't a very good manager. He's a wonderful person. He wasn't into strategy much. Anyway, I don't know where I was, what I was doing. All I did was I spotted a player and just followed him and got to the hotel in the process. It was that first trip in New York was rather interesting.
Uh-huh. How about your first game? Do you remember that at all?
Well, the first one came the next year.
Right.
And I think I went 0-4 or something like that. Some exciting moment. I do remember the first game. Yeah, the first game we played the Washington Senators. The first batter up hit a ground ball to me in my first game. It went right through my legs. And I missed it. And so the next guy up was Sherry Robertson. Did a one-hop shot at me, and I didn't have a chance to think, and I caught it, turned into a double play, and the day was saved.
Were you there with Rizzuto right from the start?
Yeah, from the beginning, yeah.
And so that was an incredible team.
Well, yeah. what we had was what nobody knew we had.
Yeah.
We had great pitching.
Yeah.
Rashie, Reynolds, Lopez, and Byrne the first year, and then Page in relief. Byrne was erratic, but he won 15 games, I think. And Page won 16 or some odd games. But, you know, the relief pitchers then would come in. In fact, the last game of 1949, Reynolds started, and we're now with a base loaded and two runs in. They had to take him out in the third or fourth inning. I'm not sure which. They brought Page in, who proceeded to walk the next two men to make it 4-0. And, no, this was on the Saturday. It was Saturday before the last game. But the point I'm getting is they brought Page in our relief pitch in the fourth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And he went all the way, and we won the game 5-4.
And so it was a much different utilization of pitchers.
Yeah.
So Bucky Harris was succeeded by Casey.
That's right. Bucky Harris was succeeded in 1949 by Casey. And I didn't even know I was going to make the club that year because I had a poor season in New York. I only had 2 years. And I never played second base before, so this was all new to me, and I kind of had to learn on the job training sort of stuff. But my biggest help came from Frank Crosetti and Bobby Brown. Bobby and I played on this Canadian Yankee team back in San Francisco.
Oh, you did?
The three of us kind of stayed together and worked together.
So this was really, in a way, like a boyhood dream come true, playing, you know, in San Francisco on that Canelli Yankee team, and then becoming the Yankee.
Well, you know, people ask me, you know, the way we were indoctrinated, you know, it's like when you believe in something deeply, you know, the Yankees weren't our team, it was our religion, and that's what we lived for. And it wasn't, you know, money then, it was winning or losing, and coming in second, you lost. There was no second place in New York in those days. You had to win. You were out of it. In fact, nobody thought about how many runs did you drive in, how many games did you win, how many this and that. We all wanted to play well and hit 300 and do well. But the bottom line was winning, because in winning, you got the big bonus at the end of the year, which was about $5,000 in the World Series. And that was an enormous amount of money then. And that's what we played for. And, of course, the glory of winning in the ring, and I remember when we won the first series against the Dodgers, all I can think of, oh, God, I got a ring. Which I never wear anyway, but
you got it. In your boyhood years, before, because we moved ahead kind of quickly, was there a superstition that you had? Any idiosyncrasy playing as a kid?
No. I was never superstitious.
Right. How about any kind of equipment in terms of the bat, the ball, the glove, anything associated with that that would be of human interest?
Well, there was a man by the name of Anson Orr, O-R-R, who was an old-timer out at Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. And he liked me, and I guess he saw that I had some talent. He gave me a good glove, a really good glove. You know, I'd never had a glove. And that, if someone had dropped a pot full of gold in my pocket, it couldn't have been more exciting for me. But, we had to purchase all of our stuff, spikes and so forth. In fact, it took me 2 or 3 years in the big leagues to get the spike that I want. I ended up with a Spalding lightweight. They don't make those anymore. The featherweight, they called it. And I bought a half a dozen of those at $26 a piece, which was, that was over $100. That was a lot of money to spend for shoes. And I kept those. And one pair I wore only during the World Series. Just how cocky I was.
Uh-huh.
And somebody stole those from me, and I don't know what happened. One of the few things I would have kept. In fact, the only thing I really have left from the Yankee days is I have a sterling silver cigarette case. And it's a New York Yankees 1951 World Champions. But if you lift up
family come from? Were you poor or middle class? Or?
Well, at one time, very poor during the Depression. The Depression, my mother and father split. And that's the reason my mother went back to my dad, because he worked in the post office and he had a job.
Right.
And but at one time, there was my sister and my mother and I lived in one room for a couple of years.
Did you?
A lot of people. Like me. not what you would call a student. In fact, I had to go to school because that was the law. And I didn't mind going to school, but I got to take my baseball and basketball shoes with me, and that made it interesting.
That's your real zest was for playing sports.
Yeah, well, you know, when in fact, when the war started, and I went through that D5 program, you had to take the physical and pass the tests and so forth, and the final phase of that was they sat you down, and it was a commander, it looked like an admiral to me at the time, and talked to me, going through my records, and all of a sudden he got to my high school transcript. My high school transcript was a disaster. It wasn't that bad, but it wasn't good at all, you know.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and said, "I can't sign this."
To make you an officer and a gentleman.
He said, "Listen, you know how much it cost to train a pilot?" I said, "No." He said, $300,000. That was a lot of money, of course. He said, "You're going to get part of the way through, halfway through or somewhere, and washout's going to cost the government a lot of money, and you won't make it." And I must have been a pretty good salesman, because I convinced him that, look, what I did in high school had nothing to do with my mental, you know, capabilities. But he finally said, "Well," he said, "you passed," and I got a guy in a 3-month period.
Coast League, though, here, did you games or anything? You have no memory, though, of any specific...
Well, we used to go on fall day. You know, Alessio Duell managed the club, and Willie Cam managed the missions. And, you know... like Al Wright and Ted Norman and Sam. That's all these guys. You know, but I probably saw maybe 15 to 20 games when I was in high school.
Not too many.
What's that?
Not too many, then, right?
Well, it cost money, and it was a long way away. And, you know, we're talking now, coming right out of the Depression, you know.
But it was very big time on the Pacific Coast.
Oh, the Pacific Coast League. They had eight teams. You know, they had... San Diego, then Hollywood, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, or the Missions, whichever way you wanted to go for it. In fact, they had both. They had the Missions and the Seals, who later became, I think, Hollywood. And then they had Sacramento, Portland, Seattle. And, you know, we followed them because that was the big topic of sports in those days, as far as baseball was concerned.
Right, and others that I interviewed who
Divine Scout told me that he thought I could be